Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. As always, it is wonderful to have you here. Thank you for joining me. So if this is your first episode that you've listened to, this season is all about my LM life lessons. So the most powerful lessons that I've learned in my life and continue to learn, of course. So we're on to lesson number 9 this week. And full transparency, this is a tough episode for me to create and to share because it's going to have high vulnerability factor for me, but also I think it's hard, particularly for women, to talk about money. And I'm a big fan of Denise Duffield Thomas. If you haven't come across her, check her out. She helps women remove their blocks around money. And I got her email. I'm on her email list, and I got her email this morning as I was planning this episode. I knew I wanted to talk about money as part of this season because it's such an important thing to talk about. And she said in the email this morning that a big part of us removing our blocks around money is to actually get comfortable talking about it, that it's not, you know, a dirty word or something we should be ashamed to talk about, that particularly women should try and talk about money more to each other and obviously to others as well. So I really wanted to put this episode together because I think it's a vital one generally. But also right now, given that we are globally living in a time of pretty intense economic uncertainty, I know talking to my community, quite a few people's roles, either hours have been reduced or days have been reduced in their roles. They have been made redundant. They're on JobKeeper and don't know what's going to be happening beyond September. People's businesses who've been affected. There's a lot going on financially for people right now. So I wanted to, really touch on this topic this week. This will be a slightly longer one, I think, because I have so much I want to share. I'm planning to create a lot of value for you in this, and also just to share from a very true and very honest place where my money mindset has been over the last few years. So, okay, I'm going to jump straight in. And first of all, what I wanted to talk about was my own money story and the stories we tell ourselves about anything in our lives, whether it's relationships, work. You know, we get those stories from our families growing up. We get them from our friends. We get them from our partners. We get them from media. We get them from social media. Those stories can, and also obviously from experiences that we have. And then we decide, okay, well, this happened, therefore this means this for everything. And we almost we can generalize as well. So with my money story, so when I was in high school, I started working, I'm trying to keep this succinct, I started working in the local supermarket. I would work from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Saturday and 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Sunday. And I did that for a couple of years. And I was working in the deli, super fetching, hairnet, the whole thing. And so I worked a lot during high school. And when I started uni then, I lived at home and I decided that instead of moving out, I would instead buy a car with the money that I'd earned through my part-time job. And I just had lots of jobs during uni. I worked in retail. I worked as a receptionist for a medical center. I worked as a receptionist for a printing company, which then turned into debt collecting for a print company, which was a very, very, very helpful skill once I started my own businesses. And so, with uni, I didn't have many hours and I had 3 part-time jobs most of the time during uni. And I also had my own little side hustle that I created, which was mentoring high school kids. And a lot of those, my clients were my cousins, but I've come from a very, very big family. And their parents would pay me to essentially coach their kids. So helping them with their study plan, keeping them accountable, not dissimilar to what I do now with my one-on-one mentees now that I think about it. So all through school, all through uni, I just had quite a bit of money, particularly given that my expenses were so bloody low. I was not paying for daycare and rent and all those kind of things back then. And then I started working, and I know I worked in Ireland for a couple of years, and I remember my expenses being pretty under control. I mean, I definitely was not earning very much given I was in an entry-level role. And then I moved to the UK, and I think the UK was the first time that I started to feel the pinch financially because my rent was expensive. I was earning a little bit more, but by the time the exchange rate worked out and my expenses were so much higher, it didn't really make a huge amount of difference. And I got an overdraft facility. I would get into my overdraft every single month. I also got a credit. Actually, I got a credit card during uni, and I would just use it to pay for clothes mostly. And then I would pay it off the next month, and I would, you know, the cycle. And then I remember my mom just saying, like, what are you doing? Like, you don't need this credit card. Just pay for the stuff and don't get yourself into that hole. And I cut up the credit card straight away and I never used it again. And so I was in an overdraft in London, but I was kind of working my way, slowly worked my way up the ladder and had my expenses under control. Moved to Australia and was kind of here with my savings and managed to make the savings last long enough to get a job and get myself set up in Australia. So fast forward the kind of first few years of working in Australia, and then I started my first business, The Remarkables Group, in 2012. And with that business, it was a very low cost business to start because pretty much all I needed was myself, a laptop and a phone. So of course, then there's branding, there's the legals, there's the accounting, all that kind of thing. So that business cost $14,000 to set up. So 1-4. And what I'd done, I'd saved a lot, mainly because myself and Wade, well, I had lived in a share house for 2 years. He then joined me there in that share house for a year. So I'd spent 3 years living in a very, very ramshackle house share. Our rent was like nothing. And that enabled me to save quite a bit of cash. So what I was able to do when I started my first business in 2012 was pay for the startup expenses out of my savings and then pay myself essentially a monthly salary for I think 5 months. I had enough money to keep myself going. And at that point, then the business started making money and I was able to pay myself. So, and that's something that I have worked very hard to be able to do. So I've been self-employed now for 8 years. Yes, 8 years last month. And I have never once missed a payment cycle. So missed a salary payment to myself or obviously to my team. My God, of course, to my team. But I've never once missed a salary payment to myself, which it's something I'm very, very proud of because I worked hard to make that happen. So when I was running the Remarkables Group, the business was doing very, very well. I was working my absolute tail end off. We had a lot of universal flow behind that business as well. And there, you know, I definitely had the stresses around finances, like, holy shit, you know, the revenue pipeline's looking a bit lean in 3 months' time. How am I going to be able to pay the team? Or, oh my God, our big client hasn't paid their invoice. I need to hustle because I won't be able to pay the team this month, and so on. You know, standard operating procedure for most entrepreneurs. But I do look back at that time and think there was never any serious money concerns. Wade was also working. We were earning in and around the same one. Sometimes one of us would get ahead a little bit and the other one would kind of get ahead again. But we were generally earning around the same amount of money at that time. I then decided to sell the Remarkables Group at the end of 2017. I sold it to my business partner. And myself and Wade were also talking about moving to the Gold Coast. That was my tree change dream. And he was on board and we found a property on the Gold Coast. So we were fully renting up until this point. We found a property on the Gold Coast, which we put an offer in, was accepted. And then we got a mortgage and I was able to buy that property, mostly using the proceeds from the sale of the business. So I was flying high financially. I had sold the business. I had a chunk of cash in the bank account, had a down payment down on this house, and all was looking very, very rosy money-wise. And then the arse fell out of my financial world at the end of January 2018. So on the day I had put down the holding deposit on the house, I had an email from the ATO, and I won't go into too much detail on this one because I have written about it a lot in my Baby You're Remarkable book. So, summary. I had used an advisor to help me apply for a grant back in 2015 in my first business, and we had received some tax relief as a result of that. Then what happened was the ATO investigated that annual claim, and they found that the claim had not been valid, and I got a bill from the tax office for six figures. It was a very, very big sum, and I absolutely shit my pants and didn't sleep for about 3 or 4 days. having received this letter. As it turned out, on exploring it, the business that I had used, that consultancy that I'd used back in 2015, had actually gone into voluntary liquidation because they found out that the tax office was investigating their business activities. And when I spoke to, surprisingly, the very, very, very nice man, Victor, at the ATO, he told me that the ATO was investigating every company that had actually used this claims, inverted commas, expert to process their grants. And I actually did a shout on LinkedIn. I remember one business owner saying that she had been hit 2 years in a row. So she'd actually almost got a double whammy of what I had received. So it was all very, 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 very shit. And around this time, Wade's business went through. So he had been running his business for 2 years, I think, at this point. And his business went through a very, very challenging period where it looked like they were probably going to need to go bankrupt. And he's spoken very publicly about this and he's happy for me to talk about it. So yes, pretty much within a matter of days, I went from being the most far ahead I'd ever been financially to the least far ahead I'd ever been financially. And I really do feel that the bottom fell out of my financial story, because all of a sudden, after, I guess, not flying high, I mean, definitely peaks and troughs, but never having a financial scare like that before, it's like all my confidence just dissipated when it came to money. And I started to really worry about money. And full transparency for the purpose, I mean, always when I'm talking to you guys on the podcast, but yeah, I just lost all my confidence. And for the last 2.5 years, until very, very recently, that was the case. So yeah, I would say my money story was shit for 2.5 years. I felt like a fraud because I mentor people on how to grow great businesses and how to live the lives that they dream of, including making the money that they want to have. And it's such a weird thing because I can help other people do that. And I have done that very successfully on, you know, many, many occasions. But then when I'm privately kind of fighting my own financial battles, it's very, very hard. And also I think what was really frustrating about it is that I knew that I could do better. I knew that I was capable of having a positive money story, that I was capable of making great money. And, you know, my first business, the Remarkables Group, was turning over multi-millions of dollars a year. So I knew that I could do better, which was almost more frustrating than just accepting that I wasn't doing well. And that's just who I was, for example. I knew that I had more potential than that. So there's been a huge turnaround for me over the last 3 or 4 months. And I'm going to share some examples of that with you, not to show off and, you know, sound like an absolute knob, because I'm hoping, particularly if you're a regular listener, you know that that's not my style at all. But I do want to illustrate the power of what I'm going to take you through in this episode. And also, I think, going back to my mate Denise Duffield-Thomas and what she says, you know, we do need to talk about money more, especially when it's going well for us, because we can then pass those learnings on to others who could learn, you know, from our lessons and what's working for us. We can pass that on to them so it can work for them in their lives as well. So some examples of why I believe there's been a huge turnaround for me financially over the last few months. My business, this is just like when I actually worked this out when I was preparing for this episode, it just blew my freaking mind. So my business in the last month has made half of what I made last financial year. So the whole last financial year of my business, I've made half of that again just in the last 4 weeks, which is just, it actually makes me tongue-tied. It's just so massive, and particularly knowing the very, very humbling place that I've been in for the last 2.5 years. It's, yeah, absolutely fucking mind-blowing. I can't, yeah. Oh, I'm still amazed and, you know, incredibly grateful and blown away at that. Also, what was interesting actually last year, and this was almost like, if for me it was a test of where my money mindset was, around this time last year, we tried to sell the house on the Gold Coast. So we've had a tenant in it since we moved back to Sydney 2 years ago. And I was desperate to sell it because I just, first of all, wanted less admin in my life. And second, I just wanted the money that was in that house back in my bank account. And I would just feel a lot calmer about life. And we tried to sell it. We engaged in a real estate agent. We put it on the market and the tenant wasn't super accommodating of group inspections and is also a bit messy. So we didn't actually manage to sell the house. So we took it off the market. And funnily enough, and I think this is just such a measure, it was almost like for me a bit of a barometer as to where my money mindset was at. Just 2 weeks ago, I had a call from that same agent saying, look, I know your house isn't on the market, but we have someone who just missed out on a property nearby. And he's really interested in seeing your house. If you, you know, are you open to selling it? And I said, yeah, you know, if the money was right, we would be open. But to be very honest, we were planning on holding on to it for another couple of years. So the figure that we put forward to the agent to say, look, this will be our asking price. The owner was, the potential buyer was happy to go look at it for that. They went to see it last week. As it turns out, they didn't really like the house. They loved the land, and it also comes with this beautiful fruit and veg garden, which they loved, but they weren't fussed on the house, so they weren't keen to buy. And I was so centered on that. You know, I was completely unattached to whether or not they would buy it or whether they didn't. And for me, that was such a measure of this time last year, I would have been so desperate just, you know, to make any money on that house. And instead, this year, I was like, okay, cool. We'll just hold on to it for another couple of years. So for me, that was a really big one. It was almost for me a bit of a universal test coming along going, you know, do you, almost like testing the strength of my money mindset, which I think has just had the epicest turnaround of, you know, that I've ever experienced. And also I had built up quite a bit of credit card debt, and oh God, I hope my family aren't listening to this. I was so proud because I paid off my credit card last year. And this was, so credit card, the reason I had credit card debt, we moved to, it's funny how this stuff kind of compounds. We moved to the Gold Coast from Sydney, and I put a little bit of the removal costs onto the credit card, just saying, okay, cool, I'll just pay that back, you know, next month. And my credit card until then had solely been used for business purposes. And then we moved back down 4 months later and hadn't quite had the months that I expected to have in the business in order to clear that debt, and added on a bit more of, you know, the moving expenses on there. And it just kind of compounded from there. And it's almost like a catch 22, because I would say, okay, cool, next month will be awesome in the business, and then I can clear the credit card, and then I wouldn't have that month, and then I'd feel, you know, it was almost like this negative downward spiral of how I was feeling about my finances. So I cleared the credit card late last year, and I was so proud of that. I told my mom, I told my dad, I told my sister. I was just so, so happy. And I said, I'm never, ever getting into credit card debt like that again. And I just need to flag, I had a credit card the whole way through the 5.5 years of my first business, and I never, ever once paid interest on it, because it would always be in credit. I would always, you know, put over a few $1,000 to make sure that it was in the clear. So when I'm sharing that, I'm not sharing that again to sound like a knob or show off at all. It's more just for me, that was such a big, and I'm using this is how I feel about it myself, not anyone else. It was almost like a fall from grace that I know I can be a very responsible citizen when it comes to a credit card. And then, you know, fast forward a year or two, and it was the very, very opposite. So I paid off the credit card down to zero. I was so proud of myself. My family was so proud of me. And then I got into credit card debt again. So same, it's, you know, it's the same mental patterns. They keep going and going and going, until we take very, very positive action to remedy them, which is the reason I'm doing this whole episode. And I'm very proud to say that this morning, it was almost like a psych thing. This morning before I got on this, I cleared my credit card again. So it's back down to absolutely zero. And it was, I could have bought a car for the amount of credit card debt that I had. So it's been cleared. And that is an absolute weight off my mind, because I never realized, because I'd never had, you know, definitely never had credit card debt before. And the only debt I've really had is kind of money to my parents here and there that I paid off, or to the ATO that's paid off, or whatever it might be. So I just realized how low vibration debt is. And for any of you listening who have debt, and it's, you know, not good debt, inverted commas, and I need to be really clear, I am not a money expert at all. I'm just completely approaching this episode from a personal experience perspective, which I think sometimes can be almost more powerful sometimes, because I think it can connect us on an emotional level. So yes, cleared the credit card again and it's gone, which is amazing. And I know now, it's again, it's almost like the house, potential house sale again. I know now that I will never let that happen again, because I know that I've changed, and therefore my credit card management will change as a result of that. So as I said, I wanted to share the turnaround to you because I want to really drive home the importance of what I'm about to share with you in this episode. And I also, if you're sitting, you're listening to this, where maybe you're sitting in your car driving, or you're out for a walk, or you're cooking dinner and you've got the kids buzzing around, or you're listening while you're working at your desk, or whatever it might be. I know firsthand I feel emotional just saying this. I know firsthand the incredible cellular stress that financial worries can bring on us. And I want to act as a living, breathing example in this episode to you that there is, change is possible. And I'm here, I've got your back. I'm going to share with you what has really, really helped me. So big, big love to you if you're sitting in the position that I was sitting in until quite recently, because I know how heavy it is and the burden and the 3 a.m. wake ups and the how the hell am I going to get out of this feeling? You know, I know. And I think that for me has been the biggest gift in everything that, you know, the whole financial fuck around for the last 2.5 years is that I feel like I got truly humbled. And it's forced me to really think about my spending and how I'm, and also my revenue generation more than anything. So I think that's the gift in it for me. And often for me, when I can find the gift in a challenge, then that challenge makes sense. And I think for me, it was the humbling and the knowing that I need to be very, very conscientious and also kind of tapping back into the stuff that I did do when money was going well and keeping that going. Okay, I'm going to jump in because I have so many things I want to take you through. So if you are listening and you can take notes, I would probably suggest it for this particular episode, but obviously you can always listen back. Or what I like to do on when I'm doing my walks, I like to take notes on the notes app on my phone. So, okay, I'm going to jump in. What did I do? That's the question I'm about to answer. First of all, I was ready to change. And I think often we can make change because the temptation of the better situation is so great that we're like, almost like the carrot is so great that we want to get there. Or we can make a change because the pain gets so intense that it's unbearable. So, you know, the carrot versus the stick. And I think for me, I hit a pain barrier with my finances around kind of February this year, and things had to shift and things had to change. And that doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's a process of realizing, okay, I don't want this situation like it is anymore. And I think also an element of that process is the acceptance, you know, the saying, well, this is where I'm at. And I am very, very good at ignoring what my credit card balance is and not opening the statements and not checking the credit card. And the painful bit, you know, it's the whole ripping the Band-Aid off first of all, acknowledging where my financial situation was, and then secondly, accepting that and saying, this is, you know, this, it's not like I've got this alternate universe where my finances are perfect. This is what I'm working with right now. And this is almost like the blank canvas I've been giving, and what am I going to do about it? So that was a really big thing for me, is that readiness to change. And Einstein, you know, you've probably heard this before, but the Einstein quote, the definition of stupidity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And there's been a different spin put on it. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I'm not sure if he said both of those or it's been tweaked over the years. But either way, I didn't want to be insane anymore and I didn't want to be stupid anymore. And therefore, I knew the situation wasn't going to change till I changed, essentially. So that was the first thing. The second thing was to be very aware of my money story, my money mindset. And I acknowledged that my money mindset was fucked. And I think I placed a lot of blame on the ATO situation and that dodgy business owner who took advantage of me and, you know, probably hundreds of other small businesses. And, you know, I put a lot of blame and really it was about me saying, okay, well, I get to now choose the story and what's that story going to be? And I want that story to be one of prosperity, abundance, of being able to create the life that I want to create for our family, offer Lexi the opportunities that, you know, we want to offer her, being able to travel, being able to walk into a clothes store and buy whatever I want, just if I want to, you know, just knowing that I could if I wanted to, always comes down to clothes. So I think the second thing was choosing the story. And I very, very consciously decided to rewrite that story and say, actually, I want abundance and I want prosperity. And what's it going to take in order to do that? The third thing that helped me, and I've talked about gratitude a lot, and it was actually, if you listen to it, it was also one of my LM Life Lesson episodes recently. And I think when we went into ISO and the whole world, I mean, Jesus, and my heart goes out to any of you in Victoria, because I know you guys are almost like reliving you're kind of doing the rerun of this experience, but we just didn't know what was going to happen. You know, there was so much uncertainty globally. Were we going to get sick? Our business is going to go under? What's going to happen? And with isolation, and I think actually this was probably the turning point for my money story. I could choose to take on the story that my business is going to fail because of ISO and people aren't going to have money. No one's going to be able to do programs or mentoring, or corporates aren't going to be investing in speaking with me. And I decided to not take on any of those stories and say, look, I'm going to write my own story. Not dissimilar to how I approached birth, because of course, for any of you who've had a baby, You'll probably have experienced firsthand, people love to share their birth stories with you. And I would very intentionally say, when someone was sharing a story with me, not out loud, but in my head, say, that's their story and we'll create our own, as in our own birth story. So I almost like copied and pasted that approach to my financial situation at the beginning of ISO, because I just didn't want to take on the stories that almost like the collective consciousness was telling me I should take on. And why couldn't my business do well or survive or even do better? And ultimately it turned out to do a lot better. So I think ISO gave me that, I guess, a sliding door moment that I can either choose to tell the story that everything's going to be screwed up and I'm never going to make any money because of ISO, or I can choose to believe the script that maybe there's potential for my business to survive, but also to thrive as a result of that. And bringing me onto gratitude again. So I kind of did a little circle back to the story thing. So with the gratitude thing, for me, and it's that whole thing of what we appreciate appreciates, and that, you know, I think Oprah said, until we're grateful for what we have, we'll never get any more. So I think for me with ISO, my gratitude was boiled down to really fundamental, simple things like we were healthy, that we had a roof over our heads, that I had the potential to make income, that my fate wasn't in the hands of an employer. And as someone who's been made redundant in the past, I found that really, really challenging, not having that control of my own destiny. And just having beautiful food and being in a position to have nice heat in our house. So we were cozy on those ISO days. A huge amount of gratitude. And I actually found, I don't think I've talked about this before, I've got this beautiful 30-minute walk that I found during ISO, and I still do it a lot of mornings. I did it every morning during ISO. And it's where we live in Sydney, we're like 10-15 minute down to the water, so down to the bay. And there's a spot, it's like a little rock that juts out in the middle of this park. And I stood there every morning during ISO and spread my arms wide, like T-shaped, and said out loud all the things that I was grateful for, and thanking God. For me, it's God. For you, it might be the universe, the creator, your source, whatever it might be. And I was, you know, I would spend probably about 4 or 5 minutes doing my gratitude every morning, as well as doing it at night, and as well as doing the gratitude journal with Wade and so on as well. So I think for me, that was a real turning point as well, because I became much more tuned in and aware of the simple things to be grateful for, and spending a hell of a lot less energy on focusing on things that I was lacking. So that was really, really big for me. Now, the other thing that's been really big, I'm not even going to try and number these because I might jump around a bit, but I'm hoping you guys are okay with me flowing with this one, is focus. So historically, I ran the Remarkables Group for 5.5 years, and we focused on the main thing, which was influencer management, and we created some sponsorship properties as well. But I can see with the benefit of hindsight that the reason that business was so successful is that I was so focused. I didn't get caught up in many, I did do it sometimes, but not many bright, shiny things, and I focused on that business. Then when I started my Lorraine Murphy business proper after I sold the Remarkables Group, I all of a sudden had almost like this playground to try all the things that I'd been wanting to try on my, inverted commas, personal brand for a long time. And as a result, over the last 2.5 years, I don't even want to do the total, but I worked out one time that I had 17 different projects on the go, like a huge amount of projects on the go. And once we got into ISO and it just took out all of the in-person work that I was doing, the speaking and the in-person mentoring, the events, the workshops, that was gone. So I was really forced to focus on just a couple of revenue streams in my business. And when we started to emerge from ISO, we were out of ISO, I went, and you might, if you follow me on Instagram or you get my emails, you might know that I took myself to Bondi for 24 hours of planning a few weeks ago. I think it was three weeks ago now. And I just carved myself out 24 hours to actually think about what I wanted to do. And there was another business that I had in mind that I wanted to launch. I was going to launch it in March this year. And then I was pushed it back. I was going to do it in October this year. And it's a whole separate brand, separate business. Still kind of obviously works into what my passions and my loves are, but it would be split focus again. And I made the decision when I was down in Bondi to put that on hold until next year. Just focus on the LM stuff and the retreats, the workshops, my LM Love Club membership, and a few different things, and just focus on them and let this second company business wait until next year. And what I now am in a position of doing, I'm only focusing on my LM business. It's a Lorraine Murphy business. And instead of working on 17 projects, I'm working on 5. And one of those is this podcast. So not necessarily kind of a revenue stream within those 5. And what I've learned is by not diluting myself, I am so much more powerful making progress and having wins in the stuff that I am doing. Because I've realized what I was almost doing, if I think of almost like a liter jug of water, a liter jug full of water, and I've got 17 different cups and I'm, you know, pouring water into all these cups and it's just, I'm so diluted. Whereas if I instead just take 5 cups and fill that 1 liter in, every cup is full. So this has been absolutely transformational for me. And also it's been just such a fecking wake up call to say, Lorraine, like, this is what you're capable of when you focus and almost just channel your energy and your time and your discipline in one or like a small number of directions. You know, this, you know, I can't even tell you then the huge turnaround in the success of my business. So focus has been a huge one for me. The next one is positive forward action. So of course we do strategy. So we create strategies and we make plans, but those strategies and plans are worth nothing if we don't iterate, if we don't actually get out there and make them happen. And I am someone that I would pride myself on iterating. You know, if you followed me for a while, you know that there's generally always something new on the go. I'm excited by iterating. It gets me really, really excited. But there's been a couple of things that have scared the shit out of me in the last couple of weeks. And what I actually wrote when I was preparing this podcast episode, it's positive forward action, even when you're afraid. And then I scribbled out even, and I said positive forward action, especially when you're afraid, because that's when you need that forward action the most. And two things that have scared the wits out of me recently. First one is, so if you listen to my business highs and lows episode at the end of last year, I talked about Clan, which was my mentoring model for entrepreneurs. And it was the big thing for me last financial year. It was my really, really big focus. And the wheel started to come off it. And I decided to finish it up at the end of June last year. And I only realized that I obviously had some negative muscle memory to that experience, because part of my planning Den and Bondi was to put together a mastermind, and that the mastermind model has worked incredibly well for me in my business in the past. I've run 2 very successful year-long masterminds back to back a few years ago. And I decided that I wanted to do a mastermind again because I love it. And also I feel like I could really add massive value, and I've changed the model. So it's also the mastermind, or they get to benefit from Michelle and AJ, my dream team as well, which is super cool. And so I planned out this mastermind and I was cacking myself, and I planned it out going, no, I'd be too afraid to approach people about this. I took Michelle and AJ through it when we went through my quarterly plan the week after I went to Bondi, and they're like, yeah, it's awesome. And I just felt so blocked on it. I was so nervous, and it was the weirdest thing, because everyone on that mastermind list, the people that I wanted to invite to it, where people I've mentored for years, some of them, they've come on retreats with me, you know, I would consider them friends. And the fact that I was terrified even reaching out to them was bizarre to me. And I realized a lot of it was because I was telling myself a story about groups that I have assembled in the past for entrepreneurs that haven't worked out, and almost like copying and pasting that feeling and that fear to this new mastermind, which is obviously completely non-helpful. So I pushed through my fear. I put together this, well, RVA put together an amazing 3-page PDF, sent it out, and I sent that out on Tuesday morning last week at 11 o'clock. By Friday morning at 11 o'clock, 7 out of 8 of those spots were full, which was just like, holy crap. And for me, that's just super exciting, because I cannot wait to get stuck into that program, like to start working on it. And the group is just amazing. I get to collaborate with Michelle and AJ. Also, the brilliant thing for me, it's a 6-month program, and it means that I've got that ongoing revenue, which is quite hard to achieve in a business like mine. So it's just awesome. Awesome, 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 awesome. And I cannot tell you how many times I tried to talk myself out of doing that. So pushing through our fear, positive forward action, especially when we're feeling afraid, is key. The other thing that scared the shit out of me, and I haven't actually started this yet, so it will scare the shit out of me, is paid social media ads. So for some reason, I've got this freaking weird block about doing paid social media ads to get people on my email list or to get them into a webinar. So a few months ago, back when I did Step Into You last year, we did a little bit of advertising to get people into the webinar that I did as part of the this Step Into You sales process, and I haven't done anything since then. And I've got this block around who will people think I am? And what if people think I'm a dickhead? What if it attracts the wrong kind of person to my audience? I mean, just stupid shit. So again, pushing through the fear, I've engaged a kick-ass person who my friend Stacey uses to work with her on all her social media ads, and Stacey does incredibly well. And as before I got on to this to record this podcast, I was going to say on this call, it feels like that, on this podcast, I was going through some ad designs that AJ sent over to me to review. So, and I know that that's what I need to do in order to grow my business. For those of you not kind of in the know, the key to businesses like mine is to be really constantly growing your email list. And I haven't done anything to grow my email list over the last kind of 2.5 years that I've had this business. So I know that it's pushing through to that next level of growth for my business, but I'm still scared shitless. So, and I've said this a lot, but I'm going to say it again here, is fear is what we feel and courage is what we do. So courage is not the absence of fear. It's not courageous to do something if you're not afraid. Like, that's not the point. It's courageous to do something when we are feeling terrified. And I can tell you, I was terrified doing anything around promoting or sharing that mastermind, inviting people into that mastermind. And also, I'm quite terrified about doing this social media ads, but I know it's what I need to do in order to deliver on that greater vision that I designed for myself on my Bondi break. So positive forward action, especially when we are feeling afraid. That's been huge for me. Now, the next thing that has really helped me is generosity. And I did a very, very good 30-day meditation course by a guy called Sath Simone. I'm hoping I'm saying his name right. And on Insight Timer. And it was all about creating an abundance mindset. And he talked a lot about scarcity complex. And I always thought that scarcity complex was just believing that there's not enough of something, whether that's money or love or sex or business success or whatever. And actually what Sat taught me in that course is that scarcity complex takes so many different forms. And meanness is definitely a form of scarcity complex. Greed is also a force of, it's hard to say, an example of scarcity mindset. So scarcity complex. So, and it's very hard. And what I realized, you know, I'm in the past, I've been a very, very generous person. I think, I think a lot of people who've had exposure to me would say that I'm very generous. And what I realized over the last 2.5 years, and this is the kind of the knot I needed to crack, is that it's hard to be generous when you feel like you don't have enough to give, that you feel like you're just getting by. So why would I give something to someone else? And I think what's really important to remember is that it doesn't always have to be financial generosity. It can be generosity of thought and generosity of deed as well. So something that I started to do was to up the ante on my thank you cards, to send more thank you cards, to donate chunks of maybe $25 at a time to Kiva. So if you haven't come across Kiva, it's microfinancing for people all around the world. So a lot of them are business owners and they're like micro grants. So we've donated, it's changing the language. It's not about donating, it's actually lending. So we've given $25 to a business owner in Ecuador so he could buy more hives for his honey business. And he's been paying us back in like $2.50 increments over the last few months. So Kiva's really, really great because I like the idea of empowering other people to helping to empower other people to have successful businesses too. So just small chunks of money here and there was really, really good. The other thing as well that I did, which I loved, and I'm continuing this, I built in a give back element with my Bali-ish, my first mini retreat back in June. So the tickets were $59. And for every spot, every ticket that I sold, I donated $15 to Project Nasi. So Nasi is Indonesian for rice. And that was, they were supporting families on the ground who were struggling to feed themselves in Bali, because obviously Bali, 80% of their revenue comes from international tourism. And I was able to donate $660 to Project Nasi, which just felt awesome. And for, if you haven't seen yet, I've announced my monthly event from now on. So I've announced my event for July, August, and September. So July is my goal setting and goal getting workshop. And that actually steps through the whole process that I used myself in Bondi a few weeks ago. And I'm doing Bali-ish again. And then the next one is in September. I'm doing a DISC behavior profiling workshop. So for Bali-ish, again, I'm donating money to Project Nasi. And for the other two events, I'm donating to Share the Dignity, which is a charity that provide sanitary protection to women who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it. So And I was thinking about this as I was getting ready to record this podcast episode. It's almost like a dance of generosity. The more you give, the more you receive. And it's just about what are those small, it's particularly if you're one of those people who are seeing or walking or talking, listening to this, and you're feeling that real, like, I have nothing. So start with sending a thank you card. Start with leaving a Google review for a local business who really helped you, like creating that generosity of thought and deed. And then as you kind of gain momentum with that and the money starts to move into your life again, is to then think about the financial element of that. So yes, I wanted to touch on generosity there. Now, the other thing that has been incredibly, really, incredibly, and you know, this is the thing, guys, as well, right? Listening to all of everything I'm sharing here with you, I don't know what the one thing is that's shifted for me. I think it's the sum of all the parts. So what I'm trying to share with you is, I guess my toolkit and all the different things I've tried. And I mean, I could probably do some scientific research, but it still wouldn't actually articulate what the biggest thing has been. So, and for each of us, there's probably one thing here that I'm maybe not focusing a huge amount on. Whereas if you listening focus on it, it will change your whole world. So we just don't know what they are, which is why I'm giving you so many things. Okay. So affirmations. I've talked a lot about affirmations over the years in my work, in my books and so on. And they're very, very powerful because essentially what they do is they start to train our brain to believe that what we want is already in existence. And what I wanted to create was some affirmations around financial, specifically abundance. And when I was down in Bondi, I wandered into a beautiful health store, and they had, so I already have a Resonate, I'll share a link to this, Resonate Essences. And it's a spray that my kinesiology gave me, and it's called Serenity. It's the Serenity blend, and it's the best self-soothing thing I have ever experienced, because the whole idea of the essences, and you can get like ones I think that you put in your mouth, but I use the sprays, is that they align your vibration, the vibration of your kind of your energetic field, with the vibration that you're trying to create. So when I spray the Serenity spray and I say the affirmation that's on the bottle, I feel so calm. I can't even tell you. So when I was down in Bondi and I found they had, you know, almost like a little library of these different essences, the sprays. And I bought the prosperity one, and I've been using that religiously. I used it a lot throughout my planning, just to kind of infuse my planning with that prosperity vibration. And I spray it every morning, and I say my affirmations to myself in our bedroom mirror. And I do it every night before I go to bed as well. And if I start to feel a bit like, oh, you know, is this going to work, particularly around the mastermind stuff, I would actually spray the spray around me, say the affirmation, and just crack on again with that positive forward action. So what that has done for me, and again, is it all this? Is it all something else that I'm sharing? It's given me a very tangible way of me even just like choosing to raise my vibration to that vibration of prosperity. So that's been a really, really big one for me. I'll share a link to Resonate Essences in the show notes as well. The other thing that has helped me massively is visualization. So what I found in my humbling financial experience is that often I would get, I'm very, very good at catastrophizing. I've got a very, very overactive imagination, and I am very, very good at creating the worst case scenario and replaying it to myself over and over and over again, almost like a movie on repeat in my brain. And what I realized is that by me not meaning to, but visualizing negative outcomes, is they're exactly the outcomes that I was creating. So what I decided to do was instead start to program in some positive visualization. So I meditate for 20 minutes every morning, and I don't do very well on this, so I try to meditate for 20 minutes in the afternoon. But in the morning meditation, what I've started doing is adding on. It's actually, I meditate for 20 minutes, and I normally visualize for almost another 20 minutes again. And I'm visualizing all the different elements of my life and how I want them to look. And I'll specifically talk about finances here for the purpose of this episode. So what I visualize is me opening my business, picking up my phone, logging into my business bank account, and seeing what's in my ballast, which is what I call my savings account in my business. I also visualize myself logging into my Self and Ways personal accounts and knowing what's in those accounts. I visualize outcomes. So for example, with the mastermind every morning, I was visualizing people coming back and saying yes. And with my retreat, so I announced a retreat last month to Noosa in October, and I announced another one 2 weeks ago to Noosa in December. So a second one of the same retreat, and the first one sold out within a week. And I visualized that. I visualized me sitting at my desk, working away, and I had WhatsApp. So myself and AJ converse on WhatsApp all day long. And I have WhatsApp open to the left of my computer screen. And I get a message from AJ saying, the retreat's full. This is the October retreat. The retreat's full. And I was visualizing that every morning. And then Friday evening, oh gosh, what is it? 2 weeks ago, I got the message and it was on WhatsApp. I was sitting at my desk and it was almost exactly like I had visualized it happening. So getting very, very specific, I also try and visualize myself, not visualize, but feel myself having the emotion that I'll have when that outcome happens. So that visualization has been very, very powerful. And it's almost, I kind of see it like if you have a blackboard and you've got all your negative outcomes written up on the blackboard, and then you get a, what you call it, like an eraser, a chalk eraser or a cloth, and you just wipe it all off. And instead you put the positive images on there. It's been so powerful to me. And I find I'm not catastrophizing anymore. And as a result, I'm almost, I'm channeling the outcome that I want to have rather than the outcome that I don't want to have. So visualization has been really, really brilliant. The other thing is self-talk. So I obviously recorded an episode on self-talk recently, but something I learned, and again, this is a Denise Duffield Thomas. I must try and get her on the show at some point because she's amazing. And something she shared is in the past when she had, you know, a lot of money blocks, she would walk past beautiful houses and or designer clothes stores and go, oh no, that's not for me. That's for rich people. That's not for me. And what she trained herself to start doing is when she saw beautiful things is say, that's for me. And it's not to say that she necessarily went and bought those things straight away, but she would say, that's for me. You know, that's for me. One day that will be for me. And she has, I won't kind of do a spoiler alert on her story, but she's built an incredibly successful business and achieved a lot of very, very, ambitious financial goals as well. So what I've started doing is when I walk with my friend Stacey every Thursday morning and we go to some really, really beautiful streets around our area. And when I see beautiful houses now, it's not going, oh, you know, I won't be able to afford that or we won't be able to afford that. It's that's for me. Walking past the Chanel store, that's for me. If I see a woman dressed beautifully with a gorgeous handbag, it's like, that's for me. Another one that I learned actually from Marie Forleo, which I think is a very, very powerful one as well, is every time she pays a bill, she says, there's plenty more where that came from. Because I know for me, and this is again in my scarcity complex over the last 2.5 years, I get to the end of the month, I have my team. So I've got AJ, Michelle, I've got our VA, I've got a graphic designer, podcast producer. I pay more kind of in chunks, but really at kind of the last day of the month, I get a lot of invoices. And very often I would look at the bank balance and there wasn't enough money in the bank to the transaction account in order to pay all of the people straight away. And that's, I just don't like that feeling. So what I try and do, and you know, don't do it all the time, but I try and kind of be conscious and remind myself to do it, is whenever I pay a bill, is say there's plenty more where that came from. And it's just a very strong message, because rather than paying the bill and going, oh, now I've hardly any money in my account, it's like, no, there's more coming. And it's just all those little kind of tweaks that we can start to make with our self-talk can be in and of their own right very, 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 very powerful. The next thing I want to touch on briefly is to be happy for other people when they have financial success, because it almost like maintains the status quo for us being financially blocked. If we see other people succeeding and we feel like, fuck them, you know, it's all fine for them. Well, they've got all these things that I don't have. So of course they're able to do that. And it's not easy, you know. A similar experience I've had is when we lost 2 babies last year, and then you've got a lot of birth announcements, pregnancy announcements, pregnant bellies walking around, and it's very, very hard. And it's almost like a meditative practice or a mindset practice is to choose to be happy for that woman and that family. So for me, with the financials as well, it's, you know, I had recently had a friend tell me that she made $120,000 from a program that she had run. And again, it was, for me, it was almost like a benchmark as to how far I've come over the last, you know, in recent weeks, because I was so happy for her. I was just like, that is amazing. And you know why it's amazing? Because it shows that it's possible, that I can do that too. And I think often we get the, you know, Australia's fame for its tall poppy syndrome. Ireland is just as hard on people who are doing well sometimes. I think it's very easy for us to talk down someone else's success or be envious, you know, just be jealous or envious of that success. However, when we reframe it, and for me, this has been really great, is to say, well, wow, she did 120K. I could do that. That's amazing. And asking her how she did that. So that's something that I would like to, yeah, just touch on here. It's when we can, and we might immediately feel jealous, but if we choose to cultivate that into a space of being really happy for someone else's financial success, then I think that is powerful and very special. And I think it raises our vibration when it comes to financials as well. And remembering then that when we do have the big financial wins, we want other people to feel that way for us as well. The other thing I want to say, I've got two last things. I'm trying to power through this episode, is to ask for it. You know, we're only going to get what we ask for when it comes to putting things out to the universe. So if we ask for, and I remember one of my old team members when I had the Remarkables group, I used to love asking the team what their goals were for the year, so I could help support them throughout the year on them. And I asked him what his goal was. And he said, oh, I want to go on a cheap holiday to Bali. That's my goal. And I was like, oh, not his only goal. It was one of his goals, his travel goal. And I was like, if you ask for a cheap holiday to Bali, you're going to get a cheap holiday to Bali. Why not ask for a luxury holiday to Bali? And you might fall somewhere in between. So I thought that was such an interesting example of asking for what you want. And Wade wrote an email recently for a group within his business, and he sent it on to me, and he's had an issue about his birthday for years, because last year his parents got him a coffee table, and he was like, it actually plunged him into quite a dark place for a while, because he was just like, do they not know me? Why would I want a coffee table? There's a million things I would prefer than a stupid coffee table. So this year, the month before his birthday, and he said to me, like, I don't want another coffee table. I was like, well, just send them a list. Say, this is what I want. Send me the list. So I was shopping with Lexi one day, and he sent me a message on WhatsApp of like all the things he wants for his birthday. And he got all of them. And you know, ones that he didn't even think he would get. So I think that was a real lesson for him in asking what you want. Asking for what you want rather than just accepting what you're going to get. So I think asking for it, for me, if I give you an example of what I mean by that, for me personally, it's that mastermind, you know, asking for that mastermind to be a reality. And then it's now turning out to be a very, very, very exciting reality. So asking for what you want and not being afraid to ask for what you want. And, you know, I could go on a whole other tangent around salary negotiation and so on that, but I'll try and keep it more top line for the purposes of this episode. Now, the last thing I want to share is to pass it on. If you find something that helps you, please pass it on to another woman or your family or your partner. You know, and I think what we need to remember here, and I want to wrap up this episode on this note, is that when women are financially empowered, they're empowered across every area of their life. So when women step into their own power financially, and whatever that looks like for them and whatever the situation might be, it changes the world. Because when a woman makes money, she changes the world. She puts it out there. She supports other people. But I think also what's really important, this is why I wanted to be open about the turnaround that I've experienced in this episode, because it's by hearing other people's stories that we realize what's possible for us. So passing it on, sharing your wins with others, you know, when it's a kind of a safe place and you feel like it's appropriate to do so, means that it makes it possible for other women to do the same. And obviously men as well, but I kind of talk to women in this podcast. So yes, I wanted to please ask you if there's something that you practice as a result of listening to this episode, or you're already practicing and it's working for you, please, please, please pass it on to another woman. Just pass it on to one other woman, because that's how we create the ripple effect of this financial abundance that I would love to continue experiencing myself, and to see every single one of you listening experience as well, and all the people that you love and care about as well. So I'm going to wrap up that episode on that note, and thank you so much for listening. And it actually wasn't as hard an episode to record as I thought it would be. And I have found that sometimes when I put myself out there most vulnerably is when people take the most out of my work. So I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity to do this. So thank you. Thank you for listening. And I did just want to end on the fact that that first event, that monthly event, is happening on the 25th of July. So it's a Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. And that is, sorry, not if I said on the 25th of July, the Saturday. And that's my goal getting and goal setting workshop. So it's a 2-hour workshop, and I'm going to be guiding the group through everything that I did myself on my Bali break, my 24 hours of power planning. And I can tell you, hand on heart, that 24 hours has been absolutely life-changing, because it's also kicked into action a lot of what I've talked to you about in this episode as well. So I would love to have you join me for that. And $10 from every ticket is going to Share the Dignity, which is a charity I already mentioned in this episode. So kind of tapping back into that generosity again that I talked about earlier on. So thank you so much for joining me. We're on to the last LM life lesson next week, which is just blowing my mind how quickly these 10 life lessons are going. And thank you as always for listening. And I also noticed that there's been a lot of new ratings and reviews over the last week on the podcast. So again, that's abundance coming my way in a different form. So thank you so very much for everyone who's taken the time to leave a review or rate the podcast. It means a lot, and it's just so encouraging to see that, and also to get the beautiful comments and messages that I get every single week. So thank you so much for listening in, and I look forward to hearing what your biggest takeouts were from this episode. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.